It's time for The Citizen Lobbyist, a discussion of local, borough, and state politics featuring Terry Snyder and Mike Malefsky.
So it's my great pleasure to welcome on the phone today, The Citizen Lobbyist. Welcome, Citizen Lobbyist.
Glad to be here, Mike.
It's been a short week of meetings, but there have been, I think, somewhat powerful. You've attended particularly two at the Borough Assembly Chambers. Why don't you start with those?
Yeah, nothing short about those, Mike.
Okay.
The first one started at 4 o'clock for a joint meeting with the Planning Commission. This is something they do about four times a year, I think. Good agenda put together, three things on the agenda. Everybody except the mayor was there. Mayor's on vacation right now. So Mr. Beck was handling both, the deputy mayor was handling both of these particular meetings. They had audience participation first, and there was only two testifiers. Sarah Williams, who's often testified in front of the borough, most recently about the importance of a hemp crop.
Right.
And another was a marijuana retail outlet owner from the Butte, who saw that one of the items on the agenda for discussion was on-site consumption, and he wanted to share his thoughts on that as a retail owner, which is really the only place that on-site can be considered. But it has to do with the state law that was just finally signed into by the lieutenant governor, signed I think the 11th, so it's fairly new. So we'll get to that in just a second.
Okay.
It kicked off by a talk, a new subject, but some familiar faces, I'll say. It was a census participant update on the importance of the census and how the borough is going to be proactive in promoting the census. The census comes every 10 years. It's extremely important because it really reflects on what kind of federal money we get. And so counting everybody that we, and getting credit for everybody and every nick and cranny is really a big deal. And there is one chance, it sounds like there's one chance for the borough to kind of have a conversation or give some thoughts on the plan that the census is conducted by. They don't conduct a census. Of course, that's a federal government thing. But they get to look at the plan for doing that in their area and make some suggestions based on current land uses, on reflecting on the last census and who may have not been counted, new growth areas, and making sure that the federal government knows that their plan is good and adaptable for our area. So it was led off by a conversation by former assemblyman from the Wasilla District, Mr. Culligan, who is on contract currently with the borough, helping them form that plan. And he talked a little bit about his background as an intern in GIS with the municipality in 84, and then actually in the GIS department at the borough from 89 to 91. And he kind of laid it out sort of actually quite well on why that is important to do and getting the census right is, and why the borough's comment period, which will happen, I think, the end of May, they have to have that done. There's a deadline, hard deadline on that, why that's really, really important. And so that was kind of an interesting, I didn't expect to see him there. I thought he handled it pretty well. He took some questions. The planning director actually took some questions too and had a short presentation. They talked a little bit, started wading into something that was on the big agenda, which has to do with it, kind of filling in the holes of the community council areas.
Right.
Of people that aren't covered in the core area of the borough. He was asked just flat out by Jesse Sumner, who has been pretty vocal on not being much of a supporter on that expansion of community councils, if he was in support, and he was. I think that shook everybody, kind of rocked everybody.
Oh, there we go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he sees the need for it. And so that was, we'll get into that a little bit later, but it was kind of interesting to hear him, you know, kind of unexpected, but he had good logic behind it, and it paid off a little bit later down on the agenda. So the next one was kind of a ambiguous and kind of hard to explain. It's a Parks, Highway, State Department Transportation Access Development Permit. And basically what it is, it sounds, if I got my head around it, and it did have a presentation, is when the DOT wants to go across the right-of-way of borough property or an owner's property, or the borough property mainly, and it concerns driveways, and it gets become very, very complicated, and it has to do with our ever widening of roads and redoing roads as we grow. They've come up with sort of a pilot project for the borough to give sort of a blanket permit process to the DOT to sort of cut away at some of those back and forth and time-consuming things that they have to do, and making the process a little simpler for that to happen. And one thing it will really be an advantage to present property owners on is that some of the driveways didn't have the best permit process, shall we say.
Okay.
And it would grandfather those in that are there now, have to deal with what we have. So it'll give some certainty to those owners that may have gotten all around to doing the paperwork on that. It sounds like it. There are 46 borough-owned properties on the Parks Highway. This is all about the Parks Highway corridor. About 7,000 acres of land. And, you know, it's just the scope of it is just recognizing that there's, you know, permitted driveways that are already there and where future driveways may occur and how that impacts adjacent borough land. So kind of a simplifying way of doing it. I've heard this come up before. I think when Lauren Driscoll was head of planning or of some of the planners, she worked with the DOT, and there was some direction from the last assembly to have a better working relationship with the DOT. And I think this is what they're going at, is to come up with a more simplified re-permitting process that isn't so unwieldy for two big government bodies trying to drive at the same time.
Okay.
So we will see. And if it's good, we will, and it passed, and it still has some hurdles to go through to get passed, but they wanted, you know, to kind of give a heads up to both bodies. It could be sort of the pilot for the whole state. So good to see them on that. The next big thing, or the last thing, was on-site consumption that I spoke about earlier, Mike. And it was requested by Assemblymember Sumner and the administration to put on there. As I talked about earlier, the state law is now in effect. Alex Tron had a very good handout, head of compliance. He had a very good handout about it, talking about the impact to it. But really, at the end of the day, we already have a law, in effect. We have a smoke-free workplace on the books now. And about 90% of what this law says and what that adaptation is kind of covers it. But there are some things to be considered that may come up as we go down. We are, I think, the first state to entertain on-site consumption, even though it's limited to just retail shop. The borough or the state law prevails unless the individual municipalities have something stronger. And the state law's got a lot of sideboards on it, having to do with fencing, ventilation, separate buildings, that sort of thing. But there is a few conflict areas, and there's some things that the borough probably should be thinking about, retail shops now, instead of being just an in-and-out facility, will have a place for people to consume product, and that means more parking. And so where there may have been some allotment for parking based on people just dropping in and dropping out, now they may be staying, because these areas could be open from 8 a.m. in the morning till 5 a.m.
Oh, okay.
So there's a lot of impact there. So it was good that they got it out front. There were some strong comments from the Assembly and Planning Commission about it. Any kind of changes on this or any new regulation would have to go through the Planning Commission. I think Colleen Vaig, head of the Planning Commission, kind of said it best, that we need to have a thoughtful process, that, you know, it's great to be first, but we should be really thinking about how this impacts other, you know, properties and the public in general and secondhand smoke and a lot of things. So she did it well. So that was kind of it. No real major comments at the very end to really discuss, Mike. So not a lot of
opposition to that discussion, it sounds like.
Of the entire discussion, or is this that last item?
That last item.
I think there are certainly different opinions. It did come up in the discussion that we have two types of marijuana legal
sure.
operations here now. We have the cultivation, and then we have retail, totally kind of different beasts. They did say that in the areas that cultivation has been allowed, they've seen an increase. They were worried about a decrease in property values, but actually, because there's so much security,
right.
neighborhoods have been actually increasing in value.
Well, that's interesting, because the story in some other parts of the country is somewhat similar for a variety of reasons. But I seem to remember that in Humboldt County, the closer you got to a city area, properties values went up because that's where people wanted to build. Yeah.
Yeah.
Their operations.
So, I mean, there's a lot of other parts of land use impact you don't know. They've received about $1 million to date in taxes. So it's not some change that they're getting out of this industry. I think there were some concerns about just the whole play out of it as it becomes, this is really a push from areas that really want the tourist industry because, Juneau was really kind of on the forefront of this because they want to be able to grab that tourist industry, and the cruise ships, of course, don't want it on the ship. So we get to provide the infrastructure for that. And I'm sure there's some of that here, too. It did come out in the meeting that as far as the cultivation, that Mr. Sumner has a cultivation project going on across the street from where he lives. He apparently was at the assembly meeting the day before, but did not, or not the planning commission meeting where it was brought up. And I haven't read those notes. I don't know what it was. He didn't speak about it. Doesn't sound like he's an obstacle in it, but he's curious about it.
Okay. So he didn't flat out come and say, there's been a problem where I live.
It sounds like there may be some litigation on the table. So they were all hedging their bets a little on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it'd be worth reviewing the Planning Commission meeting and get a little better idea about that. But there were some a few testifiers on that, but they didn't go into it really.
Okay.
So there was enough on, Mike, you and I have been at these meetings for so many times, and you look at the agenda, and it's 8 pages long, but there's really no old business, and there's really nothing but the consent agenda and resolutions, and no real new business to speak of.
Oh.
And you think, wow, this is out here by 7:15. Not so much.
That's right.
It just didn't happen that way. They had the regular reports from the city, which is Mayor Cottle, of course, only one there. And Monica Goya got up in preparation for what did get a lot of conversation, a resolution to support school funding in the governor's budget. She shared a couple of things about kindergarten night. They had 180 families, 500 kids getting ready for kindergarten and giving them kits out. And so she was pretty soft-spoken. They had a proclamation and a nice little recognition of the Palmer Moose for the varsity hockey team.
Oh, right.
Big win. So that was good. A lot of those kids were there. They had a proclamation, as they do every year, about Safe Digging Month. This is mostly just a thing from NSTAR that makes people alert to, watch, be sure you know where you're digging in the borough, because that could be a very dangerous thing to communities. And so then we kind of right along and had a public hearing. There were a fair amount of testifiers there. I didn't count them all, Mike, but split between support for education, a lot of, and people that aren't so supportive of education. It was their only opportunity to speak to the resolutions that were later on the agenda because they didn't require a public hearing. I'd say it was kind of split. The head of the governor's office was there to kind of defend it up front. The governor's plan to reduce education by 25%.
That was Todd Smolden?
Yes.
Okay.
So he spoke first, actually, a little further up in the agenda. But then the regular people started speaking out. And, yeah, lots of good teachers, of course, in the trenches coming out, talking about what kind of cuts. Birch Tree principal was there and talked about the $700,000 cut that would come to his school and how he's losing teachers. I've already lost a tenured teacher because she doesn't want to wait for a contract, which can't really be done until they got their budget. And she's moving on, and a couple of others that aren't tenured that may might lose. Good testimony by a Thielen teacher that said, you know, I've just been as guilty as everybody not paying attention to this budget process, but you've got my attention now. He said, you know, I've been digging in. I haven't always been a complimentary to the administration, but he thinks it's crazy that the governor thinks there's 25% waste in school budgets, that it's a fraction of some percent, if there's any. There's always room for improvement, but he knows that he's been making cuts and was quite supportive of the resolution for funding. So, and then, there was retractors in talking about against the community council area thing that was on the agenda a little down further. One testifier on the community council expansion said it was forcing me into an arranged marriage. She didn't like it at all. A couple of people that weren't so happy with the support for education, but by and large, I think there was more support than not. Organizer for American Prosperity, which is Assembly Member George McKee's son, Ryan McKee, was there against the resolution supporting schools. Lots of animation, I would say, at that particular part of the resolution or part of the meeting. And they went right in from that, Mike, into the community-based expansion of the community council areas.
Right.
I think Mr. Sumner was not a supporter of it. Mr. Sykes wanted to know if it was a requirement, that how it would affect community councils now that are there. Mr. Sumner's tried to delay the vote on this particular resolution because he thought that people were not publicly noticed, although they did a huge mailing to everybody, and they had a lot of information on their website, but he didn't think one mailing was enough, which is a little odd because he's sort of the conservative guy that doesn't want to spend a lot of time or money on government, but it sounded from the department that they had did a pretty comprehensive mailing to 11,000 individuals in and outside of the existing community council areas that were affected by this.
Okay.
So it went back and forth, but at the end of the day, it did pass. So it will happen. So if it holds, it'll happen. There we'll look at and just really start filling in some of these areas that back in the day when they started doing community councils just didn't have any population in them, and now they do. Even Mr. Culligan said, as assembly member in the Wasilla district, he had one community council meeting or area, community council in his area.
Right.
Whereas I think Jim Sykes said that he had seven.
Wow, what a difference.
What a difference, right? So it is about giving the public a voice, and I'm glad it was a little bit of a struggle. But the real struggle was on the next resolution, Mike, that had to do with a resolution brought by Assemblyman Mayfield opposing the state funding reductions to education. And that one was one of those bouncing ball ones that you and I have seen many times, Mike.
Right.
With amendments and substitute amendments and secondary amendments and lots of going back and forth. Mayfield started out by saying this is not an anti-Dunleavy thing. It is, they thought they had a core responsibility just by the Constitution to support education. He thought that a lot of the discussion was tied up in ideology and not practicality, that they were talking about the future of their kids. And he thought that the school district had really demonstrated that they really responsibly used the taxpayer dollar. I thought he did a good job introducing it. And then, of course, you know, it went on to being amended by Mr. McKee and that getting voted down by what he wanted to do. There were some motions to postpone. It went just back and forth. And then there was really a big discussion on that Mr. Sumner brought up on the fact that, you know, if they were going to support education wholly, what were they going to tell? They need something in the resolution to say we take the money from here. So we don't support ferries or we don't support
bigger
objects. And I thought Jim Sykes made a really good point, and he said, we're going to be asked to consider, when they sit down next week, tomorrow actually, start getting budget presentation, what we have to reduce in essential services because of this, cuts we have on our own budget with the school bond reduction and stuff. Are we going to cut ambulances or senior exemptions or, there are some real costs to these cuts, and it is a budgetary thing. But at the end of the day, it just went on and on. But there were two amendments that succeeded by Ted Leonard at the very end that were tied together. And I think this is fair to say this is a piece of legislation that nobody was happy with when they walked away. Ted Leonard tied in support for both of them, the governor's constitutional amendments.
Oh, wow.
And Beck actually sort of surprised me in being against one but for the other. The one that he was for the one having to do with a full PFD. So that was definitely a crossover on his part that I kind of didn't expect. But at the end of the day, even though there was accusations of the resolution being hijacked and a dozen other things that came up, it was passed. There probably is some question at this point. I don't think this is over. I got the feeling it was not over. So we may see everybody voted yes at the end of the day.
Whoa, okay.
For the full amendment. But I have a feeling you'll see some reconsideration, but we'll see on that if I'm right.
Very interesting. Well, it's complicated and complex both. Yes, the implications of many of these things, I think, especially with the attempts to tie them together to get some idea of how this is going to affect that. That's been one of the problems, I think, in making any comprehensive budget move forward. We're all connected.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's kind of out of the ordinary, Mike, is that you and I've talked about this a lot, that there's been a lot of, my cow didn't get gored, so we're okay. But there are people that are sort of waking up to the implications across the board about these cuts, that they supported the governor until they figured out what it cut, and now they're having a different realization. On this particular resolution, Mr. Sumner actually made a little bit of headway and a little good points in the fact before the amendments came up, that he thought that we couldn't pick and choose winners in our budget by writing resolutions. But I would lean on the side of resolutions. Normally, normal things are really kind of a memo to ourselves of what we support. I don't know that they have a lot of heavy influence. But I think this is a different year and a different weighting of those resolutions.
Okay.
Mr. Sykes said he really felt like it was, at the end of the day, the legislature was going to figure out the budget. They could only figure out what to do on their end with the repercussions of that action. But it's important that they know that we prioritized education in our budget last year. And, you know, for years, we've had a good working relationship. We have a good school district, and they should know that when they're talking about supporting a budget that cuts 25% from our school district. So it was a really interesting conversation, a lot of back and forth, and it was interesting and unique in that there was no real specific public testimony required on it because it was a resolution, but there were a lot of thoughts in the room regardless of that, because I think people are just paying attention, Mike.
Okay, we got that. Well, we have a minute or so left. Any last things you want to share about those meetings?
I guess I would share the upcoming schedule a little bit.
Okay.
I think I have it here. They are going to get into their budget talks, and it's going to be an arduous meeting. This happens every year, you know, Mike. 9 a.m. tomorrow, they get their work session. Departmental budget presentations are given. I'm going to do my best to be there.
Okay.
6 p.m. on the 29th, they'll be in Wasilla. The 30th, they'll be back in Assembly Chambers here to hear from the public here. The May 2nd, they'll be in Willow. These are all 6 p.m. meetings, these ones out of state, out of the borough. And they don't have a regular meeting until May 7th again. But they've got 1, 2, 3, 4 meetings before that.
Okay.
Before the next regularly meeting. So if you get a chance to get out, and because the public is engaged, I truly think the Assembly really needs to hear from people this year on what their priorities are and where your values are, and so they can have those in their deliberations. And we'll do our best to report what we hear and see, too.
We sure will. Well, I thank you for taking the time to go to both of those meetings. Starting at 4, finishing about 9, that's a long time. Yes.
It was.
Okay. Well,
yep.
Citizen lobbyists. Yeah.
I will say, too, that although we did not stream the first meeting, Mike, I see that it's on the borough website. The video is up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was interesting, and I think people may want to review it.
Okay.
So, yeah, good stuff.
All right. Okay. Thank you, Citizen Lobbyist. We'll talk to you next week.
Yep. Sounds good.
Bye. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Citizen Lobbyist, broadcast on Thursdays at 8 a.m. and repeated at 5 p.m. on Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska. You can find the podcast at radiofreepalmer.org. The views and opinions of moderators and guests did not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.